Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is Murder in the Morning with Tony Bruschi and Stacey Cole.
Right now, we are talking with Gilbert King of the Bone Valley podcast, Pulitzer Prize winner, journalist. This is such a fascinating story, and we're breaking this whole thing into two parts. So this is the beginning of part two. And if you've not, if you're joining us at part two, go to part one for context.
Please don't miss that.
You don't want to miss any of that. But yes, so we're at the point here where, okay, we got, you know, everything going on like you were just talking about, but then 10 years later, there starts to be some movement on this in a very different direction. Give us some more insight here into what to pick up, basically where you left off is where I want to hear.
Yeah. So, you know, these fingerprints are discovered and, you know, they match Jeremy Scott, a known killer who lived right in the same area as Leo and Michelle. And so they have these fingerprints, but they don't really get identified for 17 years later.
Yeah.
When they're finally identified to Jeremy Scott, he says, "Oh, I'm just a stereo thief. I stole the stereo. That's what I used to do. That was my MO." But presents that in an evidentiary hearing, and the judge buys it. Mm-hmm. And so Leo is denied a new trial. And because Jeremy said that, you know, that John Aguero, the prosecutor, brought him into an office with no tape recorders, no witnesses, and they worked out a deal. And which is true. I mean, it's testified to that he did not bring witnesses in. Mm-hmm. He didn't tape it. They had a secret conversation. And Jeremy comes up with the story that I'm just a stereo thief. And that's what I was doing that night. That's why my fingerprints were in there.
Yeah.
But afterwards, nothing happens. He's promised parole, he says, help with parole. And that never happens. And then the prosecutor passes away. And Jeremy Scott says, the state lied to me. And at that point, he's been in prison for 20-something years himself. He's never getting out. He writes a letter to Leo's lawyer saying, I actually did kill Michelle, and I can tell you exactly how it happened, where it happened. And he goes into detail, and it pretty much matches everything that's known and not even known from the trial testimony. But here's the thing.
Yeah,
this gets into another evidentiary hearing, and they basically just attack his credibility. You know, say, well, you said you were a stereo thief, and now you're lying. You're changing. We can't believe a word you say. And they throw him out with the bathwater because, you know, he's got a low IQ. He's off his meds. And they kind of present him as sort of, you know, non-reliable, non-credible. And so Leo is denied a new trial again when you have the man who is, think about this. He's forensically linked to the crime scene, and he confesses in detail. Imagine if this was reversed. Right. Imagine if he confessed first. Right. Any prosecutor's office would say, that's great. You can say whatever you want. But are you forensically linked to the crime scene? And Jeremy is. So the fact that it came in reverse order after he'd lied on the stand saying he didn't kill Michelle, they were able to use that against him by saying he has no respect for the truth. You can't believe a word he says.
What year was all this going on in where he confesses? Where are we at in timeline here?
2016.
Okay, so we're 2016.
We've got the technology. We've got all of the things that could actually back up his story. This isn't like back in 1987.
But they're acting like it's 1987.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, these were his fingerprints. The state, you know, stipulated these are his fingerprints, but they just went with this story like, you know, he's just a car stereo thief. It was just, you know, he's just stumbling along that. And meanwhile, I'll just tell you, when I started investigating it, I just said, I'm talking to Jeremy Scott. Yeah. I want to hear this because I see him on the stand. He's like a hostile witness, and he just gets answered yes and no questions, and he doesn't really elaborate. But you know, we went in there and we got an interview with him in 2021, and he absolutely came clean, told the story. He was extremely remorseful. He said, you know, we asked him, do you ever think about Michelle, the victim? We talked to him much differently than the police and the lawyers.
Yeah,
it was more like a therapy,
like a human
session to us. Yeah, it was very human. And you know, he said, think about it all the time. Like when I go to sleep at night, I see the faces of the people I killed. Like that's my punishment, mm-hmm. and it's a lot to bear for me. And if I can do anything to just, it's not going to bring Michelle back, but if her family knows that I'm the one who did this, and if it could help Leo get out of prison, like that's the only thing left that positive. That I can contribute to humanity is by just wow. being truthful about what I've done. And in truth, he confessed to another killing to me that he'd gotten away with, oh, wow. which completely matches. I've gone into the authorities. They've reopened the case. But like, he's being truthful. I mean, this guy yeah. he's killed four people and he got away with three of them. It was his fourth one in 1988 that he got caught and imprisoned for life. And he has a conscience. And, you know, it's interesting. Leo goes up for parole every couple of years. And, you know, he's been a model inmate. He's a leader in the prison. He's got, you know, a theological degree. He's a pastor. But they keep holding him back because he hasn't shown any remorse. He hasn't apologized for killing Michelle.
He didn't do it.
Right.
It's like what's going on with the Menendez yeah. brothers to a certain extent, where it's like, show remorse, say you did it, say you lied. It's like, well, they were sexually abused by this monster for all these years. What do you want him to say? It's the same. It's someone who's completely removed from the case itself that just wants their own ego stroked of just saying, yeah, that's so front. Yeah, I'm sorry. Continue on.
No, it's absolutely laziness, like, you yeah. know, to protect a conviction. And, you know, it just so happens that John Aguirre, the prosecutor, is the man that sent Leo Schofield to prison. He's also the man that sent Jeremy Scott to prison.
Yeah.
So he's in charge of the investigation into Jeremy Scott. He shuts it down, like, on day one.
You know, of course he would, yeah.
He doesn't want that. And so, like, that's what this case is really about. It's about the state attorney's office protecting that conviction. And I don't think anybody who listens to season two, when we really spend a lot of time with Jeremy, in fact, there's a moment in season two where I'm speaking to Jeremy constantly now. He says, you're my only friend, Mr. King. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll help you. You help me, you know, and I send him some stamps and he writes his confessions and tells me all about his life. And honestly, this guy's more credible than the state attorney's office, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He's speaking the truth. But there's a moment in season two where I was actually going down to visit Leo. Leo had gotten in a very bad motorcycle accident. He was released on parole last year. I think largely due to the fact that our podcast had reached so many yeah. people, they just yeah. stopped fighting it. So they said, just let him out, let the case die. Right. So Leo was, living in a halfway house, rides a motorcycle, just like he did back in the 80s. And he got in a serious motorcycle accident. Some woman pulled out in front of him. He was giving his daughter Ashley a ride, and they both hit on at high speed. God. Broke his pelvis. They both broke their pelvis, many, many bones in their body. Fortunately, no head injuries. So I was down there visiting him about a month after the accident, and who calls me while I'm in there is Jeremy Scott.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And I was like, and Jeremy had written letters to me saying, you know, I hope the day can come when I can sit down with Leo and tell him I'm sorry for what I did to his wife and sorry about what happened. And, you know, I really believed he was sincere about it. He would get very emotional about that. He had a great deal of respect for Leo. And, you know, Leo, in return, has always been like the only person showing any empathy for Jeremy Scott, you know, because the state just treated him like a maniac and a liar. And
how ironic.
Yeah. And Leo, because of his background, said, like, Jeremy's part of my story. I believe that he's the person who killed my wife, and I can't live with this bitterness unless I can learn to forgive him. And yeah. so, but you know, he doesn't know if he can actually do it. He's prayed about it, but you know, he's still kind of upset about this, obviously.
Well, of course.
And so I have the phone. I said, Leo, I got Jeremy. You're not going to believe this. It's Jeremy on the phone. Should I take it? And he's like, yeah. And so I talked to Jeremy. I said, Jeremy, I'm visiting with Leo. Do you guys want to talk? And they both said yes. And
wow.
put him on the phone. And, you know, I won't go into too much detail to spoil it for you, but, you know, I'll just tell you that they stayed true to who they are. These are two men connected to that death of Michelle Schofield. These two men both know the truth of what happened that night. It's not reflected in the verdict. It's not reflected in the court. But you see these two men come together and who they are. Jeremy Scott just expresses, you know, exactly what you'd expect. He's got remorse. He's sorry. And Leo just rises to the moment and just forgives him. And just they talk about it. And it's like, it's sort of this, you know, this redemption, this restorative justice that's just very raw, that's not planned. It was just a phone conversation between two men. And, you know, what's remarkable about it is that Jeremy's a troubled inmate where Leo really has his life together. Mm-hmm. And Leo just guides him. He's like hearing that Jeremy's struggling in prison. He's just resorts to the mentor role that he had in prison. Like, you got to stay through it. Stay through that program. You'll get out. You'll get moved here. We're thinking of you. Leo's like, my family thanks you. You did the right thing. You're a large part of the reason why I'm out of prison. And I just don't want you to live with the pain of this. You've done the right thing. And, you know, we're thinking of you. And it's just like this incredible moment. And it really just came from like treating Jeremy like a human being. Like, nobody wants Jeremy to get out of prison. He does not belong out of prison. Mm-hmm. Right. But what can he do within the prison to better humanity? It's to try to relieve the suffering of the people he's hurt by telling the truth. And he's been doing that. And I don't find him lying or trying to claim credit for this stuff. He's connected to the areas where all these murders happened. He's forensically linked to three of the four murders. He's confessed to three of them. I mean, there's no doubt about these. He definitely killed Michelle Schofield. And he killed a cab driver, which nobody investigated until we took it from Jeremy and started corroborating a lot of the evidence.
What was the motive for all of this with him? I mean, why was he killing all these people?
He was what they call, and the FBI has a profile, it's called a disorganized offender, mm-hmm. Which matches Jeremy to a T if you look it up. It's like their robbery's gone bad, and he's an extraordinarily violent person who's been homeless since the age of 10, in and out of foster homes, substance abuse problems. His grandfather backed over him with a car when he was a child and suffered some brain damage, yeah. Very low IQ, yeah. Extraordinarily impulsive. And so these robberies that don't turn out the way, they just accelerate into this high level of violence. There's no patterns to it. All the weapons are different, but all the scenes are basically chaotic. Yeah. You know, he just, you know, flees the scene, steals the car, runs away. But he gets away with this three times until he's finally caught. So that's pretty much his MO. It's just robberies gone wrong, you know, trying to steal Michelle's car. Yeah. She panics. He pulls out a knife and stabs her.
But 26 times. I mean, that's not, I'm going to stab somebody so I can just take their car and disarm them. It is a violent, I'm going to destroy this person. Because if you do something 26 times, there's some rage there.
I mean,
it
feels like that's what you would expect from a spouse. I mean, that's an angry crime spouse. Of passion. But if you add mental illness or disability into the mix, that can also mimic that as well, which I'm guessing that's probably what was going on here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all his crimes are extraordinarily violent. He robs an old woman, he shoots her in the stomach with a rifle and then bashes her over the head until she dies.
Yeah.
The one he got caught for, and you know, he confessed to this one too, was a man who'd fallen asleep at a house in his recliner. And Jeremy just pulled out this heavy, like champagne type wine bottle and just smashed him over the head repeatedly, then choked him with a telephone cord until he died. I mean, every one of his crimes are extraordinarily violent. He never gets away with the money he's trying to do. You know, he killed a cab driver, never got the money, stole the car, crashed the car. With Michelle, he stole Michelle's car. It broke down on him a few miles out of town. He was kind of a mess at the time. But you know, there's just no doubt that he has done this. I've been speaking to him for 4 years on the telephone, cars. He's never once denied killing Michelle or any of the people that we've talked about. And he gives with the cab driver was remarkable because he said like how he got away, and you know, he said the dogs were on me. I thought they were going to get me, but they never came. Well, I ended up talking to the lead detective, and he said, "Yeah, we could follow him until we lost him at this abandoned house." Jeremy Scott said, that's where I hid, in an abandoned house. You know, and
he's there.
He's in the house.
He's in the house. He drew a map with everything on there that was more detailed than anything I'd seen in the police reports. He actually recognized some witnesses that he'd grown up with as a kid. And he drew where they were, which is exactly where they were. There's no doubt he was there. You know, keep in mind, this is a man with a, you know, his IQ is below 80. He's not a master criminal.
No.
When he lies, when he initially lied saying that he did not kill Michelle, he can't hold that story together. It's all over the place.
Sure.
When he starts to talk about killing Michelle, that's when it all falls into memory. It's much more specific. He's never once denied this. There's no doubt that he's done these crimes. And it's just like, you know, here you have Leo insisting he's innocent. Jeremy is insisting he's guilty, and the state of Florida doesn't believe either guy. It really just makes no sense.
Do you think there's more crimes that Jeremy has committed that he's not confessed to yet, or that he's even remembers? I mean, where do you think he's at? Has he let everything out to you at this point? He has that relationship with you where it seems like he's trying to just clear his soul. Where do you think he's at?
You know, I think it's four. I think four is how many people he killed.
Yeah.
I think there may have been other people that he like bashed over the head and doesn't know. He used to hang out outside the gay bars in Lakeland and attack gay men because they were less likely to report to police any incidents. So he would sometimes roll them while he was hustling them and smash them over the head. And a lot of these times they just never went to police. But, you know, sometimes they did. And there was a lot of violence that happened that I'm pretty convinced that Jeremy did a lot more there. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he killed anybody else. Or if he did, he doesn't know it. And I did look into it. There was one body that turned up in the same place where Michelle was found. But it looked like Jeremy might have been in prison the day before that murder. And it's a little murky about, you know, when she went into the water. But it was the same spot where they found Michelle. And, you know, also like season two explores Jeremy's girlfriend. She agreed to talk to us. He had a girlfriend at the time. And she said, well, you know, the place they found Michelle's body, that's where he used to take me to have sex. That was That was our hangout. So he's connected to the scene. He's forensically tied to the crime scene. And he's confessed in detail. Like, there's no doubt. But, you know, I think it's just like the effect of the podcast when the first season came out. Jeremy had a son that he'd never really met, because he got his girlfriend pregnant right before the killing. And, you know, the son, Justin, had never heard his father's voice before until he listened to the podcast.
Okay. Wow.
And he was just always believed that his father was a monster.
Yeah.
And when he heard Jeremy talking like emotionally and taking accountability and being remorseful about it, he's like, now I want to talk to him. I always want to steer clear of him, but he didn't sound like the monster. And so that's a big part of season two. Like, It's there's some crime in there, but there's also a lot of the ripple after effects of crime and the people who kind of come together in this really graceful way. And it's all really led by Leo and the way Leo is as a person. I think it inspired the people in the story, including Justin himself, who felt really guilty. He said, if they would have caught my dad for killing Michelle Schofield, I never would have been born. So he felt this tremendous guilt for being alive. It's really remarkable that the path that this story has taken. But you know, it all stems from Leo. That's how really compelling a human being he is.
Go ahead, Stace.
What is it like for you to step back? You know, you're dealing with people who've dealt with horrific trauma. You're dealing with perpetrators of crime. People who haven't perpetrated crime. What's it like for you when you're lying in bed at night just thinking about life in general? Has this changed you as a human being? It's changed their lives, but has it changed you?
It definitely has, because, you know, most of my work before was, you know, in the 40s and 50s and everybody's dead. I don't really get to interact with people. In this case, I'm in there with Leo's family. You know, I'm talking to the lawyers. I'm talking to Chrissy. I'm talking to Ashley. I'm talking to all the witnesses. I had a really tremendous access. I had access to Jeremy Scott, the murderer. So I'm like, I'm in there with all of these people. And I remember at one point, you know, I started sending Jeremy books. And Jeremy was in solitary confinement because guess what? He stabbed another person in prison. You know, like, And you look at like, it just, I remember thinking that, like, what am I doing talking to this guy? You know, it's so obvious. Leo has like been exemplary in prison. You know, he's mentored so many people. He's a leader. And here's Jeremy and like, which guy stabbed Michelle? The guy that's killed four people and, you know, stabbed somebody in prison, or Leo? And it's just like, can we end this nonsense now? I mean, so I think about this. I thought about, you know, I eventually, it's like, Leo, I have to talk to you about this because I'm sending Jeremy books and it relaxes him. He talks about the characters in books. He gets very empathic with me and really honest with me. I think books put him in another world and let him step into other people's lives. And that's kind of what I wanted. You know, we talk about Game of Thrones. We talk about Hunger Games. I was sending him things that my kids read because, you know, he kind of dropped out of school in fourth grade.
Yeah,
sure.
Learned to read in prison, basically. But I just noticed it was different over the years as he would talk about the books and how much they meant to him. And you know, he'd ask about Leo. How is he doing? Like, is he doing all right? And he just seemed to be a better human being. And granted, nobody wants to see Jeremy Scott out of prison. Can't right. be rehabilitated, but I think he can be redeemed. And I think we have people who, you know, like there's a house cleaner in Jacksonville who heard the story and just felt so bad for Jeremy and said, he doesn't have money for deodorant and toothpaste. I'm sending him $20. And they start this writing correspondence back and forth that leads to phone calls themselves. And she becomes like this motherly figure, getting him GED books, helping him study. And he starts revealing things about his life and becoming a more human person. I had to go to Leo. I said, Leo, are you okay with this? Like, I'm talking to Jeremy Scott, the man who killed your wife, and the reason you've been in prison for 36 years. And, you know, Leo's response was just all Leo. He's like, Gilbert, I'm proud of you. Jeremy's part of my story too. And I want him treated with care. And it really taught me a lot about humanity and loss and grace under this kind of pain. It was just a tremendous example, and I don't think I ever could have done that without coming into the story.
No, I mean, it's kind of amazing that's something that Leo was able to do after, you know, essentially having his life taken away from him. And then, you know, he's left to live the last years of it, but all stolen away by this one man and somehow finding peace and grace for that individual. We so rarely see someone like a Jeremy taking any sort of accountability. I mean, it's just, it doesn't happen. It's just, they're in their zone. They're usually in their mental, you know, illness or whatever, personality disorder. And that's where they are. They don't come out. Why do you think Jeremy did? Is it because it's a different type of situation? He's very low IQ, had the abuse, had brain damage, and he wasn't like other killers that are out there, not in the, you know, the pathology that we see so many where it's, like I said, a disorder or something that ends up going down some sort of crazy route. Is this, you know, because he is more of a human, but it explains more of what he did based on the damage that was done to him?
Yeah, I think he was severely abused. I mean, he was beaten, you know, when they came time for the sentencing hearing, the family had to testify, and the abuse and the neglect that they described was just unbearable. His mother abandoned him at birth, just didn't want anything to do with him. He grew up thinking his grandparents were his parents. Mm-hmm. And his mother was floating around the scene, but he didn't know she was the mother. She wanted nothing to do with him. That kind of rejection, I think, I'm not a psychiatrist, but like, I think it adds something when you don't know who your father is and your mother just, you learn at like age 7 that she's actually not your mother. She wants nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
I just think there's all sorts of trauma in there, physical abuse. I mean, I don't want to go too far into that because Jeremy doesn't make any excuses himself.
No, you know? No. Says, that's kind of him. Extraordinary about all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the last things he said to me is like, look, it's just one of these candid moments I had on the phone after he and Leo had that conversation. He was standing at a kiosk at a payphone, and he was surrounded by inmates. So he was kind of careful about the words he was saying, and he didn't really want to get emotional. Yeah. But he did a little bit, but he was holding back. But then he called me back a little later, and he just kind of wanted to process that. And I said, you know, did Leo's words make a difference to you? And he goes, you know, I got to be honest with you, it nearly broke me down talking to him. He said, you know, just knowing that, like, I'm the reason he was in prison for 36 years. And then just to hear him free and out and riding his motorcycle, it got me real emotional. And, you know, he the way he just described it is like, I ruined that man's life. And, you know, he has a conscience. I talked to his family members and, you know, I said, what do you think about these confessions? And they said, his younger brother said, the Jeremy I know did have a conscience. And if he's saying that, like, I believe him. The younger brother was in prison himself. And he said, you know, this stuff wears on you. And as you start getting older, it starts to take even a greater toll on you. And, you know, Jeremy described that. You know, he says, like, I go to bed seeing the faces of the people I killed every night. It's my punishment. It's torture. Yeah. And, you know, by talking about it, he said he sleeps better. He's relieved himself of that. And I think Leo's words to him have helped him too. You know, it's a very strange situation. I'll just sort of say this. You know, when I don't have much experience with this, but I've had it a few times talking to people who have killed before, and they'll kind of tell the story of it. They'll get you right up to the point of the murder, and then it starts like the aftermath of the murder. They don't like to actually go there. And you saw that with the Murdaugh trial. The judge said the same thing.
Yeah.
In you know, decades of time, I've never seen a guy like actually describe the moment where the trigger is pulled. And Jeremy does that to an extent with Michelle, but he you can see it bothers him to, you know, admit that part of him. So he said, I stabbed her, I lost it, I don't know how many times. And then he gets to how he moved the body into the water and that he gets into the details of that. But with the cab driver that he killed, because nobody would believe him, nobody would believe me, I asked him to go there. And I said, I need you to tell me everything. And he did. He wrote this 6-page letter and he drew that map. And then when I interviewed him about it, he just told me everything. And everything matched. Stuff that wasn't even released to the media, that wasn't even come out in trial, he knew. So like, there's no way this guy did his own little investigation on the side. This guy's speaking from memory. And so that was a thing that I asked him to do. And you know, you're asking someone to describe the moment where, you know, the worst moments of their lives where they killed somebody, they took a life. And, you know, he's 55 now, 56. It weighs on him like it didn't when he was an adolescent when it happened.
Sure.
Is Jeremy getting any therapy in prison? Is he getting any sort of psychological help for what he's been through? And I know that sounds like a strange thing. He's killed people. But it sounds like he's really going through something as well. And we talked about humanity. Is he getting any assistance in that regard?
Well, in this part of our story that we cover in season two, which I think is just so fascinating. So, you know, Leo, as a theological student and a pastor at the church in the prison, once he got paroled, he got moved to a transition program to get him ready for parole. He had some people who studied under him, assistant pastors. And one of them happened to get transferred to Florida State Prison. And he was walking through there, handing out literature. And he was telling inmates who were locked up in solitary confinement that he was from Hardy Correctional. And he hears a voice saying, you from Hardy? And the man goes over there and he says, yes, I am. And he goes, do you know Leo Schofield? And Oscar says, yeah, he was my cellmate for 7 years. We studied theology together. I know him really well. He says, my name is Jeremy Scott.
Oh,
and Jesus. Oscar goes, I know who you are, sir. I've studied that case too.
Wow.
And he shook his hand. And, you know, Jeremy was blown away by that. He told me, he goes, yeah, someone like who knew Leo didn't treat me mean, like was kind to me and shook my hand and talked to me. And so now somebody from Leo's camp, who's all about, you know, nonviolence and love and, you know, he lives and walks the walk. His disciple, Oscar, is now caring for Jeremy, going in there talking about, you know, his situation. And, you know, Jeremy gets choked up talking about Oscar. Like some friend of Leo is actually caring for me, making sure I have the glasses I need to read, talking about my health, talking about death, talking about the things he's committed. And so we had Oscar calling in every time he visited with Leo, and he would give us updates on Jeremy. And this whole thing just sort of developed in a very strange way. Again, it's all about Leo and like Leo's message spreading out and reaching out to Jeremy and caring for Jeremy. I don't think there's anything quite like it. And there's nothing forced about it. It's just who Leo is and the effect that he's had on people. I get emotional talking about him.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, that judge gets emotional talking about him.
Sure.
In the very first interview we did, I said, Judge Cup, you know, what has Leo meant to you? And he's like, he just starts crying.
Yeah.
And he goes, I can't be a judge crying on this tape. And like, I like,
yeah, you can. You can be human.
Yeah. Well, I'll just tell you, this judge, he, during the podcast came out, he said, that's it. I'm resigning from the bench to go back to being Leo's lawyer. And he did.
Oh, wow.
Quit the bench and went back to Leo's. Then he argued for his parole. So, yeah, people walk the walk. And I think it's all about Leo and believing in Leo. That's how he's been able to stay married for so long, because he is the truth and he lives the truth. And his truth and his goodwill is so strong that it's basically helped another family, Jeremy's family, mm-hmm. rally around Jeremy for doing the right thing. So,
wow. It's, yeah, it's an humanity. Incredible story of, you know, humanity, redemption, and grace in some of the most difficult and mentally, you know, almost impossible moments of some people's life. And what an amazing story it is. Gilbert King, Bone Valley Podcast, and season two is about to launch here. What's the date of the drop on the new
one? It already did, didn't it?
Yeah, it just came out like 2 weeks ago. So we're, I think we're on episode three right now.
Okay.
There's six in total. So
wherever you get podcasts, check that out, Bone Valley Podcast. It is, it's an amazing story. Thank you so much for joining us. This has been an incredible conversation.
I can't thank you guys enough. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I really appreciate your level of questioning.
I loved having you, and keep in touch, because I'd love to follow more of the things that you were researching and going into. Quite amazing.
That.
Check it out. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of the stuff we cover here for you. Let us know in the comments on YouTube what you think about this case. It's quite amazing. We'd love to hear from you. For Stacey, I'm Tony. We'll talk again soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.